Blog Talk Radio.
I guess these guys are just too fucking chicken shit to stand up for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Hey, back in the day, if you didn't stand up, you deserved to be bullied. I mean, that's just you couldn't go into a bar anywhere and have people just run you down. You'd have to make a stand or you couldn't come back into the bar. I don't get that shit. I really don't. And I had something else here I wanted to talk about. What was it? I wanted to get carried away with it.
WWE.
Well, WWE, yeah, I'm going to leave that to last. Another thing that pisses me off is wrestlers getting so fucking political. You know, I don't like the actors and the actresses telling me what I should believe, and because, hell, we live different lifestyles. But for wrestlers to come on and, you know, just really, and I don't mind them having a side. We all need to have a side. Hey, I think Cornette just gets wildly out of fucking proportion when he talks about that shit.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
I think he just fucking, well, of course, it's the Trump derangement syndrome.
Yes. No
they
doubt about that.
They cannot see anything but him and talking about grabbing a pussy. And I'm thinking, you know, some of you motherfuckers are guilty of the same fucking thing. You just didn't get nobody, nothing knows about it. So don't act like you're better than somebody. That's shit that bothers me. Anyway, I just wanted to get a little bit of a roll about it anyway. And I want your help on this one. WWE are hinting about trying to sell off part of their franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Are they trying to sell off the network?
That's what I heard. Network, ESPN, or Fox.
But I thought, who owns Fox? Doesn't Disney own Fox now?
No, they own 20th Century Fox, which was just a division of Fox. Fox, I think, is still Rupert Murdoch, I think,
okay,
if he's still alive.
But I read Disney owned Fox, and I went, wait a minute.
No,
that's
the movie division of Fox. Yeah, 20th Century Fox, yep.
But 20th Century Fox is under the Fox banner, or no?
Not anymore. I don't know. I really don't know if it truly was.
But 20th Century Fox was in operation a long time before Fox News came along.
Right. Yep.
So 20th Century Fox is a standalone company as opposed to the Rupert Murdoch Fox, correct?
Yes.
That's what I thought. So you got to watch this shit on this fucking internet because, hey, do you know Evan?
Yes.
You ever interviewed him?
A couple weeks ago, actually, yeah.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, right before Benoit came out, yep.
Yeah, it's a good show. So help me out with that. You'll be probably better at a straight interview than I will. But anyway, anytime you're ready, I'm ready, buddy.
We are ready, whenever you're ready.
3, 2. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another star-packed edition of the University of Dutch. I'm Dutch Mantel, and of course, joining me today, my co-host, John Paz, I call him because I can't say his other name. John, how you doing?
I prefer that, actually, as well. John Paz is good, but I'm doing very good. Dutch can't complain.
How do you say your name?
Pazarowski.
Pazarowski, and that is Polish, I assume?
Very Polish, yes.
Remember a guy named Ed Waskowski? You remember Easy Ed, and he was the Colonel De Beers?
Yeah.
His real name was Waskowski.
Oh, okay, yes. Colonel De Beers, yeah, of course.
He was a great guy. And I don't want to get off on a tangent, but that Colonel De Beers character, he had it down perfect. He invented it. He nurtured it along. Hang on a second, John. We may have to start this over. I don't know what's mad at this fucking TV. It just fucking, all of a sudden, it's off and it comes back on. Damn it. Fuck. Son of a bitch. Yeah, I don't even put it on mute anymore. I just have to turn it all the way down. You know, you can't get the fucking sound to work when you want it to. Then you don't need it. It pops right in. All right, let's start it again. 3, 2. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the University of Dutch. And I'm the host, Dirty Dutch Mantel, and you're not. And I'm joined today by my co-host, John Paz, and I'm going to call him Paz, excuse me, because sometimes I mess up his last name. Pazarowski, John, is that?
Yes,
is that,
you got it. Yes, yes. You
and
got
how
it
are
right.
You, and how are you today?
I am doing very good. I can't complain. And I know you were going to say that it's a very Polish name. It is very Polish.
It is a very, and I was going to ask you, do you know a guy named Ed Waskowski?
Not by that name, no.
So you knew him as Colonel De Beers in AWA.
Yes, great gimmick, great character.
Oh, tremendous. He was a great guy. And, you know, he was a big guy. He's about 6'4". He's about 260. Very athletic and had a lot of interesting conversations with Mr. Waskowski. And when he did that, I don't know what he was supposed to be a South African, correct?
Yes.
It was you couldn't do that today. It was a little it was a little racial, and I'm not laughing at it, but he just did such a good, you believed it. You actually believed, and if you didn't know him, that he was really from South Africa. But anyway, I'm glad to be back, and we're going to we got a special guest today, and his name is well, first of all, he's the director and the producer and the writer and the
creator
and the creator. He was the father of Dark Side of the Ring, Mr. Evan Husney. And I worked with them on the first season. They're in the second season now, Dark Side of the Ring. And I don't know if you know that. I think you said you've interviewed him before on your podcast, John.
Yes. Yep.
But I think he told me last year that, and we were trying to guess the viewership last year. And I told him, I said, I think it's going to amaze you. I think you're probably going to see upwards of, you know, now I'm used to WWE numbers, but we're talking about Vice here. Vice sometimes in some places is about as strong as public access.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
But I told him, I said, I think you'll get up to 300,000, 350,000. And I think that final show, well, they only had a 6-show run. I think it hit close to 400,000. Do you remember anything about that, John?
I thought it was 420 or somewhere around 410 or 4, somewhere around between 4 and 415, 420, I thought it was.
Well, good. And I told him, I said, I think these numbers are going to surprise you. And he said, well, what do you think then? I said, well, I know my people. I know wrestling fans. Plus, I know the show is it was a good show. It was just a great show. And the thing that, and I'll tell him when he comes on, Mr. Husney, I'll tell him straight up his face, because I'm not afraid of him. I don't work for him anymore. But I'll tell him straight up. First of all, you got a pandemic this year, and everybody is at home. And it's a Tuesday night, too. So what else is going on? Nothing. They don't even have any baseball games or anything. You don't have any competition. And this is the first-run program. So I think this year is going to really surprise them. But it last year, it was the number one show ever on Vice. So,
yep. What do you have to say to WWE, though, having the worst ratings of all time? How come everyone's at home but nobody's watching them?
Well, because what, WWE? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, Raw. Again, 1.8 million, whatever it is. Terrible.
I feel for those guys. I really do. I don't want to say anything. I'm not going to say anything negative about them, because they're busting their ass, and they're working under extreme negative conditions. And I don't care who you are. You cannot go out on a show without fans and have it be watchable. It's just not watchable. I mean, I'm sure some of you have been to wrestling matches with no fans there. You have no environment. The fun of going to a wrestling match is watching the other fans. That's part of it. You know, some woman getting up at ringside and raising hell, or some drunk guy or something, but he's part of the entertainment. So if he's not there, what are you going to watch? You're just going to watch whatever's going on in the ring with no people there. And they have no story. They don't, you know, we spoke a few weeks ago about watching WrestleMania. That was, I swear to God, I think, you know, some states, I'm going to go off on a tangent now. You know, are you for the death penalty or against the death penalty, John? I don't want to put you on the spot here. You kind of for capital punishment or against it?
Probably lean for it.
Well, but a lot of people are against that.
Right.
So this was my idea, how to kind of get a nice little median that everybody could live with. I would take the convicted accused of some hideous crime in a chair and tie one arm down and the two legs down to the chair legs. And I would leave one hand free, and I would have a shelf within arm's reach. And on that shelf, I would have one cyanide pill. Then I would put in Monday Night Raw, and I would tell him, you're going to have to watch this till you die, or it's just going to go over and over and over. Of course, the cyanide pill could take you out of your misery right away. And I think about 20 minutes, he'd take himself out. He's gone. Everybody's happy. The people who are not for it, he committed suicide more than he got punished. But that's what I would do. And I think a lot of people would take the cyanide pill instead of having to sit there and watch a boring show. And again, I'm not blaming WWE, but they're having to work with what they've been presented. This is another thing I want to bring up, John. You know, I read all kind of shit. Read everything. I read shit I'm not even interested in. I just read it just to kind of see if anything catches me. But from what I am hearing, Dusty Vine and probably fans hear a lot more than I do. But WWE is, you know, Vince did an investor call last week.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And in the investor call, he said that WWE might or could possibly be out of the live event business soon. Now, take that as you will, but it looks like to me that business is not going to be the same if it ever will be the same again. And, you know, Vince is taking a butt kicking with that XFL closure. He probably lost $500 million on that. Plus, he's getting sued by a lot of coaches, correct?
And Oliver Luck, the guy who was running the president of the league, suing him too.
So he's got a lot of lawsuits. So it I'm sure it's bothering him. But do you think it is possible that Vince, you know, we've heard all kinds of stories about, I know Vince, you know, we all know. And what you hear about him is mostly true. Sometimes he's very temperamental, and you know, even when I was there, you know, you go up to what they call the gorilla position, where you've got Vince sitting there, and, you know, he sits there all by himself. Everybody stays away from Vince. It's like he's got the, it's almost like he's got the coronavirus.
Hmm.
5 years before the coronavirus came out, people just stay away from him. But you go up there, what they call the gorilla position, and that's where you study, and he gets mad, he throws, he raises hell. But do you think, because he wants to be in charge, that's what Vince says, he brought that company from just a regional company into a worldwide, you know, realization and did a hell of a job in it. But do you think he would sell that company or just a piece of it? Do you think that's even possible that his ego would let him do that?
Honestly,
or does,
I can't see
or does
it.
The ego, and I'm sure the ego does outweigh the bottom line, but, you know, that'd be really tough for him. What are they talking about selling?
See, I can't see him selling WWE. I could see him selling off the network, though, because I think he sees some dollar signs and some possible profitability that way. So I could see him selling the network to ESPN and Fox, which is kind of a big rumor right now.
Now, the network is all the footage?
Yes.
Well, what
and the pay-per-views.
What would that be worth?
That, I don't really know. I mean, it's got to be worth probably tens and tens of millions for sure.
I would say it'd be worth it. He's got like 30 years of material. I think it has to be in the hundreds of millions.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Yeah, actually, you're probably right. It is extremely valuable. Plus the pay-per-views, like WrestleMania and stuff, they would be using future pay-per-views and WrestleMania. So, yeah, you're right. Probably in the hundreds of millions. It's going to be a huge sale if that ever happens.
See, when you're talking about the footage that Vince has, and I think this is what, you know, a lot of people don't realize, and sometimes I don't even realize. You said, why would it be worth that? Well, one thing it's worth that is whoever's buying it is buying it for perpetuity. They're purchasing it for eternity. So if this is 2020, if you bought it 100 years later, 2021, it's 100 years later, but you still got the same stuff. Plus, you got all that other stuff that comes behind it. And that's another thing, John, I didn't bring up. Is WWE replenishing their stock? Are they still shipping it over to those people? Or does it start anew? Good question, huh?
Yeah, very good. No idea.
Okay, say it's we sold it up to we, like a goddamn lawyer or something. we sell the stuff or to, say, you said ESPN?
Mm-hmm.
But,
or Fox,
but 2021, we start, and who gets that footage? Who gets the pay-per-view footage going forward from there?
I think that whoever buys it, that's got to be a part of the deal, I think.
Then that jumps the price, because that not only is a lump fee, that's almost a yearly fee added on.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Could be a $1 billion deal. I may be talking out my butt. I don't know. I've never even thought it as high as $1 billion, but it's hard to envision, you know, Vince getting rid of anything. And you know, if he's even thinking about it, something is happening. Now, how long ago in WWE did the head marketing guy or the head CEO, what was his name? He quit, and a woman quit like the same day. I resigned. You remember that?
Oh, Michelle. Well, I guess they were fired, technically. Barrios and Wilson. Weren't they technically fired?
Well, probably they were. So what's the reason there? That has to be tied in somehow, doesn't it?
Well, I guess at one point they took a big loss, but now it looks like they're actually up and making money, and their stock is up right now, which is crazy to think, but it looks like they're actually thriving somehow in this pandemic because of these TV deals and whatever other, you know, Saudi Arabia and whatever other side deals that they made.
Well, the stock is up because of the Saudi Arabia deal.
Yep.
And because of the interest in ESPN's interest. That's why it's up.
Mm-hmm. Yep, for sure.
So there was something else I was going to say. You know, I don't like to bring up shit, but I will. You
bring
know
it
Joey,
up.
Joey Ryan, right?
Oh yeah, of course. Yep.
Okay, and I like Joey, you know. And I don't care if he does the dick flip. I don't give a crap. But I'm just breezing through Twitter today, and he put up a post about bullying in wrestling, and he's glad it's gone. And I'm thinking, I said, it's just totally out of where they even came from. But he showed this clip, and some people may have seen it, of Vader beating the shit out of this enhancement talent. And as I'm watching it, it didn't look like Vader was hitting him that damn hard. He was solid, but that's the way Vader was. But he called it bullying. I mean, he said he was in there and he was doing his best. He was trying to keep a job or get a job and blah, blah, blah. Hey, if you can't take it, don't get in the wrestling business is all I can say. And if he didn't want to get hit hard, you know, I guess Joey is high enough in his career, I guess, that he could kind of say who is bullying and who is not. But so glad Mr. Ryan, and nothing against him. I'm not mad at him or anything. But it was just an odd statement to make. It was a good thing he didn't come along when Bruiser Brody was around and have a match with him. Because Brody would have stomped the shit out of him.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
Stan Hansen would have stomped the living shit out of him. Abdullah would have just smothered him. And then the Road Warriors would have eat him up. And, you know, some of these guys, Buzz Sawyer, they would have just been all over this kid. So what are you going to do? I mean, if you go to the ring and you get eat up by a guy I mean, that's the guy's job, is to kind of beat the shit out of you. So you've got to fight back. If you don't fight back, to me, you get what you deserve. Now, if the bullying comes back into the dressing room, I'm not for that at all. Leave it alone. But if it does come back and Joey wants to say something about it, then he has every right to. But then again, he better stand up for himself and be prepared to fight. Because sometimes it's better to shut up than to say something and get a second ass whipping. But this time in front of your buddies in the dressing room. So, and I've been in a few fights in the dressing room because today, if you fight in the dressing room, I wrote about a fight I had a long time ago in Savannah, Georgia, with this Puerto Rican kid. And I had a fight in the dressing room with him. I've told you that story, John.
Yes, actually, I think you have. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, but it boiled down to a bad fight, really did. And I was saying that if I hadn't stood up to the guy that night, then everybody would have looked at me differently. Like he won't do nothing. He's a piece of crap, or, you know, because if you're a man, you got to stand up or do something. And I would have been better off going over there and getting my ass kicked and doing nothing. At least they'd have said, well, he's got some guts. But the day after that thing happened, everybody looked at me different. I could tell they just looked at me differently. They said, damn, this little motherfucker will fight you. So, and that's all you got to do to stop a bully. You don't have to beat him up. You just got to stand up to him. Because sometimes the bully's thinking, you know, if I fight this guy and get my ass whooped, I'm done. I won't have the ego anymore. So, I just wanted to bring that up. So if anybody wants to call up Joey, oh, Dust Mantel is fucking, he's hammering you on the show. I'm not doing that, you know. Of course, and this is another thing that bothers me, too, since we brought this up. Sometimes wrestlers take it upon themselves to get political and tell everybody else how they should feel about certain political candidates. Guys, give it a fucking break. My God. I mean, and we're talking about Trump. I mean, the Trump beats that. I think Hitler has had better write-ups than Trump. I swear to God. Everybody is on Trump. And all the newscasts, oh, blah, 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 what up, you know. And then we go to the talk shows. It's the whole monologue is about Trump. You know, after 3 years, it gets kind of old, and it doesn't get funny. But they should all sit down and write him a check at the end of the year for like $50 million because that's what he meant to him. You know, I've said this before on this show. If you're a writer, just see what he says on Twitter, and that's what you got to report on that day. That's all you got to do. So,
yep.
Well, have we solved any of the problems of wrestling yet?
I think we're getting there. I think we're getting there. This bullying thing, I think he's got some. We can solve that.
Oh yeah. Well, one thing: stop bullying and stand up for yourself. But you know, this is another. Don't get me going, John. Because the more we get going, the more I fucking start talking. Listen, WWE, listen, this is like you're getting slapped one side, then you get back slapped coming back. The WWE has pinned a whole campaign on anti-bullying, right?
Be a star.
But goddamn, isn't that what wrestling is? That's what wrestling is. Two guys team up on one guy and beat the shit out of him. That's bullying. And we go to a pay-per-view to see this guy get even. It's based on bullying. So I used to watch it and say, oh, you shouldn't be bullying. And his two guys got some guy with a noose around his neck dragging him on the floor in the back. So I'm saying. And the thing that makes wrestling, not WWE, is all these things are going on, and the guy's tied up, and he's getting whipped or with a belt or something, but nobody else helps out. Everybody else just walks around like, well, I'm not involved in this. See, back in the day when I wrestled, if we had a babyface getting the shit kicked out of him, well, we would be obligated, if I was a babyface, we would be obligated by just common sense to go help the guy out. And actually, that gave the heels more heat because when we came in, the heels would run. But now the heels just beat the shit out of the guy, and then they go to break, and they're standing over the down baby face, and I think it kills all of them, damn truth. You know, that's called getting away from common sense and a story and getting to the into the absurd. Anyway, listen, we're going to take a little break, folks. I want to let you get up, maybe go get you a cup of coffee, get you a drink, and do something. We're going to play a little bit of Hank Jr. in the background just for a little musical interlude. And when we come back, we're going to have a special guest, Mr. Evan Husney, and we're going to talk about the fascinating world of Dark Side of the Ring. We'll be right back. Don't you want to grab him, John?
Hey, Evan, how you doing? This is John. We've spoken before from the Two-Man Power Trip. I am here with Dutch, Dirty Dutch.
Oh, great.
Hey, Evan, how are you?
Good. How are you doing, man?
Good. So, listen, we're going to do a little countdown, and then some music's going to be playing. And you just want me to come in when I want to, John?
Yes.
Yep. Okay, I'll just say we'll let it play a little bit. All right, fans, welcome back. Like I said, we took a little bit of a musical interlude. We're back now, and my special guest, and I'm very excited to have this gentleman on, Mr. Evan Husney. How you doing, Evan?
Hey, how's it going, man? Thanks for having me.
Have you missed me?
I have.
Great. Oh, good. Yeah. I was telling John right before, you know, and I did a little introduction on the front side. You didn't hear. But I said that you were the creator and the writer and the director and the producer and the stagehands and the cameraman. Basically, you came up with this idea of telling stories about wrestling that involved real life. And it's a unique look at the world behind the curtain in professional wrestling. And it was a great idea. And Evan, let me ask you this. Where are you from?
I am originally from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Okay. And you grew up a wrestling fan, correct?
That's right. Yeah. Ever since I was 5 years old, I got into wrestling because my mom bought me a Big Boss Man action figure for some sort of holiday, I would imagine.
Nice.
And the primary colors of the WWF, you know, like the marketing genius of the WWF spoke to me as a child so much. And I went to my first ever show, I think it was like 1991. And I don't know, Dutch, have I ever told you the story about the first show I went to?
No, you didn't. In Minneapolis?
Yeah, it was in Minneapolis. It was a WWF house show leading up to WrestleMania 7, I believe. And just for a little backstory, I was a huge G.I. Joe fan as well as a kid. So I was really fired up to see Sergeant Slaughter. That was like who I was – that's what I – who I really wanted to go to see. That's who I was, the only person I knew in wrestling as a kid. But when my parents took me to their shock and awe, he had just, you know, defected to the Middle East. So now he's this Iraqi sympathizer character.
That
and
bastard.
I'm still cheering him. And I'm still cheering him and, like, you know, like, yeah. And my parents are like, no, stop. You know, because they were, like, concerned that I didn't – well, I wasn't getting what a babyface and a heel was.
How old were you? Five?
I think I was – five or six or something like that.
And they're telling you, shut up.
Yeah, because, like, you know, like, they probably thought I had some developmental issues or something because I wasn't getting what they were putting down. And then all of a sudden, this bald guy with a skullet comes out with an American flag and starts beating up my hero, and I actually was bawling, crying. And, like, I was like, why are they beating up my G.I. Joe? And then, you know, I just didn't get it. But that was my whole first experience with wrestling. And it was I was, you know, into it ever since.
great story. I love that story. So you grew up, since you were 4 or 5, as a huge wrestling fan.
Yeah.
Did you,
oh, yeah.
Did you follow like AWA wrestling, or was that still around?
Oh no, that was before my time, unfortunately.
Okay.
But my parents, my family, you know, definitely, like, you know, my family was definitely aware of Vern Gagne and AWA. I mean, that was a household name, you know, growing
okay.
up in Minnesota for sure.
Well, so you grew up a wrestling fan. Where did you go to college?
I went to college for like a minute in San Francisco, and then I dropped out because I was really I was like too anxious. I just wanted to make things. I wanted to make things, and I just didn't want to like take a lot of these. I just went to a bad college. I think if I went to a good college, I think it would have been different.
So you didn't go to like production school, or you just started doing it, right?
Well, it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be like a film school, but I went there, and then they wanted me to take all of these bizarre like elective and like general art classes.
Like
and it
English,
just wasn't
like
where my
English,
passion was.
Like English,
and drawing,
yeah.
and
fuck that
stuff
shit.
And just,
how's that
exactly.
gonna help you create a just be a damn genius later on in the film in the film of filmdom? So
yeah.
you're a fan all your life.
Yeah.
And I, mm-hmm. you know, I go to a lot of WrestleCons, and you started going to them now, Evan.
Mm-hmm.
But when I go there, somebody asked me, hey, do you go to see all the people you used to know or you know? And I said, no, really, what I really like, other than seeing the guys I haven't seen in years, I actually like to talk to the fans. They have much better stories. And the wrestlers, because I've heard all their stories, but the story that you just told us, never heard that story even when I was around you. So let me get to this point. You created the show Dark Side of the Ring. When did you first have that idea?
I mean, it was definitely an evolution. It didn't all come together at one point. I mean, basically, after I dropped out of school. You know, I actually worked in film distribution for 7 or 8 years, releasing movies, and that got me to a job at Vice, and I kind of audibled into a producer position there, and started making things. I started making, like, short-form, 20-minute documentaries, and I was fortunate enough to make stories that, you know, were kind of about things that I really liked in my childhood, like, you know, things I really just was really passionate about. And wrestling is obviously a huge one, and I always was trying to figure out a way to do a piece about wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, all right, well, maybe we can, as Vice, get access to do a WWE-related story. And then they didn't want us to do anything with them, and they were basically – we weren't able to get access to, you know, the world of the WWE. And then, you know, I tried other little smaller stories and couldn't really find anything that fit, and then it was – you know, Jason Eisner, who co-created the show with me, and he actually directs the show. We've known each other for over 10 years, and we bonded over our love of wrestling. And right around that time, we were sharing like shoot interviews. We were like passing back and forth YouTube links of these shoot interviews and just like admiring like how unbelievable the storytelling is. Like, you know, wrestlers are incredible storytellers. And it's so dramatic and so, like, and also, like, cinematic, too. Like, and I even remember one of the ones that he passed me was actually your shoot interview that you did with Sean Oliver when
mm-hmm.
you were talking about the day that Bruiser Brody died. And
mm-hmm.
it was just something about, like, you know, the like, your cadence in telling the story and, like, your pacing, your, like, dramatic pacing, which I'm sure – you weren't aware of at the time, but like in telling the story, it was like, I could see it. Like I could really like see it as like a movie almost, like it almost transported me like there. And so we kind of just like, that's when we really started to get fascinated by the story of like what happened to Bruiser Brody.
Yeah.
And like how it kind of like became this like forgotten story in the world of wrestling, like something that like generations of fans don't really even really know about.
Yeah.
So then we started to.
That is true.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's like, you know, and then we looked at like, it's very interesting, you know, even from like a non-wrestling fan point of view, it's a very fascinating story looking at like how there's this murder story that's wrapped up in like a wrestling locker room. And then kind of the truth versus fiction side of wrestling is kind of woven into this story. And that just seemed like a really interesting kind of, you know, story to revisit and to rediscover. And so that's the one that Jason and I really zeroed in on. And we also, at the same time, got a newfound respect for Bruiser Brody.
Mm-hmm.
When we were just like, oh my God. Like we were too young to have appreciated him when he was alive. So we didn't really know a whole lot about him growing up. And, like, just seeing, like, how real this guy was and just, like, how menacing he was and, like, captivating, like, visually just captivating. And so we just kind of thought, like, this would be the perfect subject for a documentary. And so that was what the original idea was. The original idea was just to do kind of a standalone piece that would be, you know, just about that story. And then that kind of – it quickly became clear that – you know,
there were other stories.
Well, there were other stories, but also that the department I was working in, like, I was only doing like web content, and this was a bigger story than the budgets that we had. And so then Vice at the same time was launching a TV network, and then it was like, oh wow, so maybe this could be a fit for them. And so then we brought it to the TV network, and then kind of it just developed more and more from there. And it was like, are there other stories? Well, of course there's other stories. And then it became this thing where maybe we could make a whole series about, like, you know, different stories in the world of wrestling. And it just kind of built on that. But, you know, it wasn't always,
it's a fascinating concept and season one. And I don't know if I told you, John, but I think Evan, tell me if I'm lying or not. I was actually the first guy you talked to about going forward with this project, correct? Because I was connected to the Bruiser Brody story. Is that right?
Well, I was just about to say, yeah, like after we kind of figured out like where the home for this could be, like on the TV network, you know, we had to basically say that we had access to people, you know, who were part of the story and people that would talk to us, and we knew who we would be able to put on camera. Shout out to the Dark Side of the Ring in any capacity, like outside of the company, because I had seen this, because like it was the shoot interview with you that I saw that was like, oh my God, this could be really great. And then it was also you had written that you had published something on the internet that also told more of the story. You know, that
and,
it was like more than what you had said in there.
Yeah, and I actually wrote a book in 2010.
I'm not
I wrote
sure.
a book. And yeah, it was 2010. I wrote the whole story in my book, The World According to Dutch, which is still on sale, by the way, if you only want to pick it up. But,
oh, yeah.
So, and I bought, and an old timer used to tell me, unless you take these stories and you document them with either the written word or the spoken word, they're just going to die. Nobody will recall it happening, and nobody can say, oh, yeah, I heard so-and-so say one time. But unless it's documented and, in your case, filmed or taped or, you know, it's just a story that's something that happened. It should be more well known than it is.
Yes.
But it was but your other stories. I know the Brody one, you kicked the series off with Brody, correct?
Well, that was the first one that we made, but the first one that actually aired was the Macho Man episode.
That's right, the Macho Man. So
yeah.
I was honored really to be a part of it. Because I saw you and Jason's, I saw you guys how much passion you had for the project, and it showed. Watching it back, it showed. And
Thank
correct
you.
Me if I'm wrong again. Mm-hmm. But didn't I tell you, I think you were going to be surprised by the viewership?
Yes, he did.
And the first one, I don't know what the first one did, but I think it did 130,000, I think, something like that, or no. But
I think it was 150, not to split hairs. I think it was like 150,
yeah.
Something in that range. Because I always called you the next day with the ratings. I remember,
yeah,
that.
and that surprised you. Did that surprise you?
Well, so of course. I mean, you know, like the ratings that the channel was getting prior to that, or actually at the same time as that, were very low. And they were kind of in a flux of like, what do we do? Trying to reinvent it, trying to figure out something. They had tried like a live program that failed, and they tried a few other things. And after we had made season one, we like, you know, thought we knocked it out of the park. Like, we thought we did a pretty good job. And we were just like, you know, eagerly awaiting it to come out. And then it basically sat. It sat for like,
yeah, it did
sat on the shelf for like 5 or 6 months. Yeah, like 5 or 6 months it sat. And then an executive over there, when I was inquiring, like, what's the deal? Let's get this out on the air. He basically told me that the show would not come out until, I think, February 2020. So imagine season one coming out just a couple months ago.
Wow.
You know, well, it's hard to wrap your head around.
Well,
and we petitioned. Well,
let me ask you a question. You may know the answer, you may not. If they had sat on that show, the first one we did, which was the Brody one,
yeah,
right? So, and they didn't run it. Who would own that? They would still own it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like they would own it, and yeah, it would have just been up. You know, it would have been
so
up to them. And
what do you attribute that to? Just letting it sit. Just being unaware of the wrestling audience?
I think so. I think it's a stigma that wrestling has carried with it for a while, which is,
okay,
yeah, wrestling can get good ratings, but are those viewers, like, do they matter to advertisers? Like, is it an audience that, you know,
this is what they're calling wrestling fans. It's what Hillary called wrestling fans, the horribles. And that's why she lost the election.
Deplorable.
But it sounds
right.
Did she say that or not? Deplorables. Like,
right,
gotta get up, you go to a job, you're a farmer, and you drive a truck, and you just piece of crap, and this, that, and the other. You know, eventually, after a while, those people get pissed off for being trying to,
yeah,
for people looking down on them. Hell, they're busting their ass. They're paying their taxes, and for people to think they're better. I don't know. That pisses me off anyway. So,
Okay.
No, go ahead. Ask your question.
Well, I was just going to say, like, this is kind of what we had to prove. Like, what we had to prove to the network was that wrestling fans in, you know, that's not true. You know, wrestling fans are a paying audience that have money, and this is an affluent, you know, subculture. And what we did is, it was actually the argument that we used to get it on the air was, I used the argument of AEW, because AEW was not yet on the air. They hadn't even announced that they were going to be on TNT. And so we said, look at the shows that they're doing. They just did a sellout show in Las Vegas,
yep,
sold out in 4 minutes. And it's not people locally from Las Vegas that are just showing up to that show. It's people that are flying in, they're buying hotel rooms, and they're spending a whole weekend of a convention there, and they're probably spending a few grand each minimum just to be there, you know.
No.
So, yeah, exactly. And had that venue been bigger, had they booked a bigger venue than the MGM Grand, they probably would have sold it. They probably would have sold more. They probably would have sold.
How big is MGM Grand? 12,000?
It's like 14,000 to 16,000,
okay,
maybe. Somewhere in there, I think. Don't quote me like verbatim, but somewhere in there. You know? And so
let me just get back to the let me get back to the viewership numbers talk about anyway. Say you did 150,000, and every week it went up 50,000, 60,000 people, correct? Because word of mouth got out. What was the final show? What was the viewership on that? Wasn't that the Moolah one?
The Moolah was the final show. I think it like went down a little bit by the final show, but the second to last show.
That's because it was a that's a woman show. People, you know, I'm misogynistic too, you know.
No. I think,
but the Moolah show was
peaked with the Von Erichs.
Oh, yeah, okay, that was the peak of it, the Von Erichs, correct?
Yeah.
That was a very very good show. You guys did this really well, because I saw.
Thank you.
You know, a lot of people don't know this, but Evan. Some of those silhouettes you saw in the back running around, that was Evan and Jason. They set the camera.
Some of them.
Get us running across the back. But you did a fantastic show. Now tell us about this second season. But let me before I go there, while I'm on this road here, who was kind of hard to work with of your guests, the hardest one?
The hardest to work with?
Yeah, I just.
Oh boy, tough questions right off the bat, huh?
Were any of them just like kind of hard? I wasn't hard, was I?
No, you were not. You were a night off, as they say in the ring.
So who was hard? Was Abdul a little bit hard?
Yeah. Yes. I mean,
because I know Abby, I love him to death, but I know he can be a little difficult at times.
Yeah, because, you know, we kind of walk the line between TV person and wrestling fan, you know,
yeah.
And both aren't
uh-huh.
good necessarily in the eyes of a wrestler, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, so we had to kind of earn a lot of trust, and we had to earn a lot of street cred, you know, in terms of what we were doing.
You had to do it quick, too.
Yeah,
you were on a budget.
Season, of course, yeah, exactly. And, you know, season one was harder because we had nothing to really point to. And season two, it was a little bit easier because, you know, we had established ourselves a little bit. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, Abdullah definitely was, you know, you
hey,
know,
champ.
Trying to coordinate.
Hey, champ. You know, when you see Abdullah,
hey,
yeah, when you see Abdullah, you see here he comes, he looks like he could just, he looks like that Muslim baker from one of those Mideast movies I saw one time. You think he was just going to pull out a sword and behead you at any moment. And then he comes up and he starts talking to you, hey, champ. You go, what? I mean, the voice does not match the body, I'll say that. But Abdullah,
No.
I've known him a long time, love him to death. So how was Kevin Von Erich? How was he to work with?
Oh, amazing, amazing. You know, we didn't even – it kind of came together, like, serendipitously because we actually were just going to interview him for the Gino Hernandez episode. That's what the original plan was. And then our office was like, you're going to go all the way to Hawaii for that, you know? And, like, and so then the idea was like, well, what if we did a Von Erich story? And then it just kind of snowballed from there. And then we just found ourselves out there in Kauai, and it was amazing. It was incredibly beautiful.
And that helped the story.
Oh,
just being out there, being out there and showing that helped the story. As a fan, narration on it. So I saw it, but I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, you know, that really helps the story because it shows that he got away from wrestling. He went as far as he can go almost. And he's living his life now, which is I think you guys did a great, great job on it.
Thank you. Yeah, that was definitely a wild experience. Like, and I think you're right. Being on his like home turf, you know, it was like it just helped him open up. I think even more and be more, you know.
One more question about season one, because I looked at it like a fan too. Even when I was sitting in the studio with you here in Nashville. Are there in Nashville. I'm in Florida now. But when I was sitting there in the studio with you, and I'm watching the Gino Hernandez story. And I remember Gino, I was in Florida. I was in here working for Eddie Graham. And here comes Gino, and he's just a young kid. He'd probably been in the business 6 months. And he was one of those type kids. Everything, he just walk around wide-eyed at everything. So, and he really, really good guy. But I'm watching that
right.
the way it ended. Do you think he was murdered or that was an accidental overdose?
You know, we always try and leave viewers with kind of like at a crossroads, right? To kind of come to your own determination. But me personally, you know, it was the wildest experience we've had making an episode. Definitely one of the top wildest experiences, because like we did take like off the record meetings with like people like at restaurants where there were only tape recorders. And,
so the
you know,
guy,
we,
wait a minute, the guy who people who are familiar with the story, the guy who was in prison, you met with
yeah.
him?
No, I actually didn't get a chance to meet with him in person, but I met with his former accomplice, who
uh-huh.
is like, you know, he's the one who has the voice that's altered in the piece.
Yeah.
And
was he in prison too or no?
No, he actually
okay.
never did time. And I think that's one of the main factors of his voice being disguised.
So, but you know who really, to me, what was the referee's name? Rick what? What was the referee's name?
Oh, Lord.
I can't remember his name now.
You're talking about David.
David.
Oh, Lord.
Manning,
thank you.
David Manning.
Sorry.
He added so much to that. Good talker.
Love
him. Talk with authority. But you know who else I really liked in that? Gino's mother.
Yeah.
She seemed such a sweet lady. She did. And he was the only child, right? Right? Did he have
that?
A sister? Was Gino an only child?
No. He had a sister. She's in the piece in the very beginning, but she wasn't interviewed.
Yeah.
But she's in the very beginning when they're looking through the photo albums. It's a really heartbreaking story. And that,
yeah, it is.
That
and you can still see the mother is still in grieving over that. Still.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say,
that's sad to say. All right, now listen. I told you a while back that I think you're going to be surprised by your ratings. And I haven't heard anything, the ratings this year. Because we're in a pandemic now. Everybody's
right.
home.
Right.
What did your first two or three episodes do? And don't make me a liar. No, what did the first episode do or the second episode, let's say?
Are you talking about season 2?
Yes, season 2.
Okay. I'm actually Googling it right now because I don't know off the top of my head. Is that sad or is that weird? Or
That is sad.
I know that Benoit did like a 1.2 million, but overall platforms. I know that.
So it did.
It was 1.2 million across 3 broadcasts that were that day. So that means the East Coast, the West Coast show, because it's not synced. And also the East Coast replay. So it's 3 plays on 1 day total, 1.2 million on
wow.
just the cable. Yeah.
And you can call me a psychic if you wish. Remember I told you not too long ago that since we were in this pandemic, that your ratings are going to be way, way up because everybody's home. It's quite natural.
Yeah.
They're going to sit and watch it. Plus, you hadn't really looked at it this way, I don't think, Evan, but you're presenting a much better wrestling product than what WWE and the other companies doing because they have no fans. And how good can a show be with no fans? We were just talking about no fans at the arena right before you came back on. I mean, I was trying to watch John Oliver. I'm kind of a John Oliver fan on Sunday night. I'm trying to watch him. He don't have any fans and he's damn sure not funny without fans. I mean, I think he thinks he's funnier than he is, but you need fans. It's like going to a comedy show and there's nobody out there. And you just hear the guy talking and, you know, one person smile. You're not going to laugh, I don't guess, unless it's really, really funny. But you got to have fans. So anyway. But anyway, I'm very, very happy for your success. And and I knew that this second season – And you're kind of, I'm not saying you're lucky, but you got it in before the lockdown.
Oh,
correct?
By days. Days, by actual days.
By an actual day?
By like a day or two, because we had shot our last series of reenactments. I think it was 2 days before the province of Ontario shut everything down to only essential businesses. So we actually 2 days we would have been totally screwed, but we just made it. Yeah, and I'm back. The last three episodes of season two, which is the Road Warriors, Herb Abrams and the UWF, and Owen Hart, we all had to finish the editing of those remotely, which we've been doing from our homes. And so it's been quite the year. Even pandemic aside, it's been a wild year of just we made twice as many episodes this season than we did last season in the same amount of time with the same money and the same staff. So it's been crazy.
Well, sometimes when you do that, you can be a victim of your own success. Because now, if you try to do it again, they say, well, we need you to drop that budget a little bit and make two more episodes. So
it'd be impossible. It'd be impossible.
But anyway, like I said, I was very honored to work with you. I was very honored to even be associated with the first season of Dark Side of the Ring. Now, John,
well,
John, I know you want to ask this question. Well, if you did so damn good there, Dutch, why wouldn't you on the goddamn second season, goddammit? Well, that's a long story. That's a governmental thing. And the thing was, right, Evan?
I can tell the story.
Tell them the story.
Yeah, so so basically, after we wrapped season one, after it had aired, and Vice, we started negotiations to do season two. And we did that, and we signed our deals, and we showed up to the first ever production meeting to discuss what the episodes were going to be and the plan of action, and not have to move back to Canada, because that's where we produced the show, is in Toronto. And season one was still technically an American production, but we were shooting it in Toronto, just because the exchange rate is good, and there's other there's other pluses for that, and also it was easier for Vice for us to do it in Canada, so we did it. And when the second season started, we basically, as we're getting into production, we got blindsided by like, oh yeah, so this time around it's actually going to be a Canadian production, and we are relying on the tax credit for that. So in order to do, it's really boring, but in order to do that, we need to
have
all the...
Well, it's not boring to me.
That's true. That's very true. But it's just, whatever, like nitty-gritty stuff. But the main point is that all of the key creative positions for the production have to be essentially Canadian. And the narrator position is technically the equivalent of your lead star. That's how it's looked at. So it's basically like having a movie, like getting a movie financed in Canada, and like your lead actor has to be Canadian. And so in this instance, our lead actor had to now all of a sudden be Canadian. And I think Dutch might be the furthest from being Canadian that I can think of.
I'm not a Canadian. So I was replaced by Chris Jericho, by the way, and who is Canadian. So. And that was, so I can kind of bitch about government interference and making money. So anyway,
there's no reason to have there would be no practical reason to change anything we did last year, because it all worked and it was all great. And had it been up to us, I mean, you would have been there center. It was just obviously by the way things worked, it was just one of the many curveballs that we had to. We had to maneuver, and
John,
including a pandemic.
John, you have any questions?
I do. We had Evan on our show, the Two Man Power Trip. Great guest. Speaking of ratings, ratings.
That was crickets. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, speaking of ratings were through the roof for that one. So awesome. Thank you again, Evan, for coming on. But I had a question for you. When is Dirty Dutch making his return?
Hey,
Good question. Well, we definitely should, if and when season three is a thing. I mean, first off, we're not going to know how it's financed. Second of all, depending on, you know, we should figure out a story that definitely, at the very least, that, you know, you can be a central figure of. And, you know, there are a few that come to mind right now, but I don't think we should tip our hand just that, you know, we don't want to spill the beans. But I think there's a couple stories that you could, you know, that you would definitely be a central figure of. That would be amazing to include, for sure.
Oh, don't tip your hand. Okay, how does the third season look?
Like, if we're going to do it or not, or if it's going to happen?
Yeah, just overall view. Is it going to happen, you think?
Well, I mean, they want to make it happen. They've already kind of said that publicly, and they being Vice. And, you know, for us, it's just like, you know, we have to make sure that, you know, this was a very hard year. It was a mad dash to get this to actually do this, and the workload was pretty extensive. And so I think we need a little bit of a breather to like get our minds and bodies back. And then I think, you know, if the circumstances can be just a teeny bit easier, I think then we will be happy, and then we can make this happen, you know, and then do it again. But the good news is there's no shortage of stories to tell. You know, that's the thing. For better or worse, you know, there's no shortage of dark side of the ring.
I've told you this, Evan. I'll tell you, John. The beauty about this series was and is, you didn't have to be a wrestling fan to enjoy it.
Yeah.
If you're a wrestling fan, that's a plus. But if you're just a fan of, you know, like, say, Snapped or, you know, Cold Mystery Files or whatever, it's told in such a way that you can follow it from beginning to end in a linear fashion and get to the finish. And
right.
You know what? You know who I think watched your show a lot? Women. I think you had a lot
of
women. You had a lot of women viewers. Because my sister hates wrestling. She hates it.
Right.
But she watched the show. Now, she primarily watched the show because I said I was on it. But she watched it, and she, you know, she got hooked on the show. And
that's
amazing.
And she said,
that is a very, very good show. Okay, I'm gonna wrap this up. Evan, how can we find you on social media?
Yeah, you can find me personally at Evan Husney on Twitter and Instagram.
How do you spell that last name?
My last name is spelled H-U-S as in Sam, N as in Nancy, E-Y. And you can follow the show at Dark Side of Ring on Twitter and at Dark Side of the Ring on Instagram.
Okay, very good. And you got an email address you want to give out or no?
An email address? Actually, you can get us at Dark Side. Well, they can also get to us at darksideoftheRing@gmail.com.
All right. Well, hey fans, you can find me on Twitter, Dirty D Mantel. Find me there, or Dirty Dustman 1 on Twitter and Instagram, and on Facebook. I'm there. I don't even know what it's on. I don't hardly ever go on there. My email address
you should.
Dirty Dutch Mantel with two L's at gmail.com, and I usually answer all the emails I get, which last week totaled like 1.5, because I got one, it wasn't even finished. It was just, say, it just stopped. So anyway, that's my luck. Hey, I enjoyed it, guys. Evan, love you, man. I'm looking forward to working with you again. Love the show.
Yeah.
I think this interview, John, I think is the best one we've done so far, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
the best one. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Folks, we're going to get out of here, and I want every real American, or I want every rowdy friend, to please stand up, put your hand over your heart, and let's all say along with me, we the people.
We the people.
Fans,
we the
I'll
people.
See you next week, and we may have another special guest. I'm not going to announce now, got another special guest next week, and we'll see you then. Take care.
All right.
Very good, Evan.
Okay, thank you, brother.
That was good. I appreciate you coming on, because I knew this would be a good one, because you're a good talker, and you're passionate about the product. And John, I think he just told me like 2 days ago, 3 days ago, he had you on as a guest. So
Yeah, I remember that. That's awesome. Yeah.
So I will I'll plug this on my social media and see what we can do with it. And even though I wasn't on the show, I watch it, and it's fascinating. It really is.
Man,
you know?
I really appreciate you so much.
People,
I mean, yeah, it all started with you, you know, so.
Yeah.
For sure.
Hey, John, when I first got a call from Evan, I didn't know him.
Hmm.
I didn't know what he looked like. I didn't know nothing. I just heard a voice. And he's talking about, now this is my reaction. Evan, you haven't heard this. But I hear the voice,
sure.
And I hear the idea, and, you know, I kind of hear the passion, too. But I've heard that before. But it's usually with,
right.
You know, fans that really are, you know, fans of wrestling with more, you know, vision than they got money. That's what I'm saying. So, but the more you talked, and you called back a couple more times, and then it got serious, then I met you, and then it all came together. Because you were very persistent. And I will say that for you. You were very persistent because you wanted to get this done. And you will forever be known as the man behind Dark Side of the Ring. This is, to me, I think this is going to go down as, for wrestling fans, cultural events.
Oof. Thank you. Wow.
You may even make the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame.
Oh, my.
And that's moving up, buddy. That's really moving up. Hey, John, where is the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame? It's in Iowa?
Yeah, there's one in Iowa, yeah.
Is there another one?
Waterloo.
Actual spot.
Why
Waterloo,
the fuck,
Iowa.
Why in the fuck would they put it there?
Yeah.
Oh, I have no idea.
It should be like in Memphis or something.
Well, yeah, it should be in a place that has a little bit of history about it. To me, I would think it should be in Vegas. I think it would.
Or that.
If you put a museum up. Well, may not now. There's nobody there. And I think if you put up a Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, it would do well. Didn't WWE have a traveling Hall of Fame one time that went around in this big trailer?
I think so.
Who had that? Somebody had it.
I don't know.
But anyway. Hey, Evan, if you need me, you got the number. Take care. Stay safe.
Oh, yeah.
Don't get the coronavirus.
Thank
you. You too, John. Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate it. Take care, guys.
All right.
Bye.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Appreciate it. Thanks, John.
Bye.
All right. Bye.